I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Football Ramble. Manchester United go hunting for their new manager, but unfortunately it won't be Phil Brown. It's Tuesday, the 22nd of March. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
The way you said that always makes me think, actually, it's a pseudonym.
What,
he's,
Luke Moore?
He's got a secret little name. He's got a secret hidden name.
Like John Le Carré?
Exactly, yeah. Like John Le Carré.
It's not the perfect crime, is it? Just being on camera and microphone all the time. People will be like, oh, no, I'm sure that's not too bad.
I'm sorry, I need to cut you off. I need to cut you off, guys, because we need to crack on because there's some seriously, seriously big news that we need to get to at the top of the show. We haven't got much time. You know, there's a lot, well, it's international break, so there's a lot of big stories. But the biggest of them all, welcome to the Mike Dean tribute show. He's going to be hanging up his whistle.
It's a sad, sad day, but is it better to have loved and lost? I say yes.
In this instance?
I say yes.
I don't know if as a policy that's correct, but certainly in the case of Mike Dean.
This must be what it felt like when the Beatles broke up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like just this unprecedented...
They're not breaking him up.
At least we get a few more... Well, potentially. So the story is, guys, before you all just, you know, give up watching football and the will to live, the story does seem to be that he's in negotiations be a full-time VAR. So I guess that's less of a physical job.
It's a lovely gig.
When you get to 53. What I wondered is, does it count? Does the red card tally count if you're a VAR? Because,
it's
of course,
question.
And do you, if someone checks it and it stands, or if it gets upgraded from a yellow, do you get like an assist?
VAR's fucked the ref stats because you can't legitimately say, excuse me, you can't. It's not what you can legitimately say, but it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
If a referee's chosen not to give a red, VAR's told them to do so, and they've done it because they're not essentially making it and doing it themselves. I suppose they get the element of the screen and everything like that. It becomes very complicated. But Jim, are you sad it's over or just happy that it happened?
I'm sad it's over. I've got to be honest.
Not yet over, Jim.
Yeah, but there's what, like 10 games left of this season.
We could do a tour.
Who's going to be his last red? Like he's going to be trigger happy, surely.
Gerrard
even
did a
by
tour.
His own.
Was it Terry? Terry and Gerrard, pretty much, it felt like a tour.
Yeah.
Didn't it? In their last season.
Oh, Terry had did that
stupid thing with
the Guard of Honour thing, didn't they?
Yes. Came off in a certain minute.
I think Mike Dean's going to want to do that.
Well, if it was. I mean, we should really start think seriously about what Mike Dean deserves here. Does he deserve this kind of retro? Is this the most seismic thing to happen to football since Keyes and Gray left Sky Sports?
It's up there.
Yeah.
I think the most appropriate thing for him to do.
I don't think we should put. I think that's a bit mean, Luke. Don't think we should put Mike Dean on a kind of...
It is mean to him. I was doing it on purpose.
Oh, yeah. All right, fine.
I think the most appropriate
ending... I'm always
there
to back you, Mikey.
will be him kind of concluding his final game, walking himself into the centre circle and then just sending himself off into the night.
Jim, that's definitely going
to
happen.
He red cars himself, hooks himself to a wire that's on the top of a helicopter, and just reverse abseils out.
Off I pop.
Yeah. Kind of Keegan-esque.
Off I pop. Someone brings out a big mirror, a full length, and he red cars himself, and then he reverse abseils up into a helicopter and disappears into the sunset.
Yeah. Okay, enough of all this.
Slash the VAR room.
A few weeks later, he comes back to do VAR. Yeah.
But, enough of all this silliness, guys. Let's be serious. Jim, which is your favourite of Mike Dean's 114 red cards?
Oh, it is off your pop. It was Lewis Dunk.
Okay,
it? He sent it for a second yellow. Off your pop.
All right.
Was that a no-look red as well? He had a habit of that, didn't he?
He does a lot of no-look yellow.
So nonchalant. That is part of the quality of Mike Dean, isn't it? Mm. He's, you know, he's affecting the course of a game, but he manages to make it just like, another day, you know, another day, another dime. As he was saying, not so very long ago, it's a hobby to him. So the question actually is he giving up, Luke, or he's just going to do it pro bono?
Yeah.
It's quite interesting
for the football community.
He thinks of it in that way, because obviously he gets, you know, relatively speaking to other football players, he doesn't get paid very well, but relatively speaking to the whole country, he gets paid pretty well for his job, but he still sees it as something he enjoys. That's good. He loves Tranmere Rovers, I know. So
yeah, that, do you remember when he was at the game, just like
going
stood
crazy
on that thing going absolutely nuts?
Not quite,
it's brilliant.
Like, but people, a lot of people took the piss out of him, but I quite like that.
The Mike Dean origin story, I think, is quite an interesting one, because I remember, so he started out very, very early on. I was reading when I knew we were going to be talking about this, that he started out as an assistant referee in 1995. It was
bloody
a long time
hell
ago, right?
Well, he's been in the Prem since 2000, hasn't he?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Given the physical requirements. Yeah. But what he also used to do, I remember a time when we first started the Ramble, where Mike Dean always had a reputation to me, just as a viewer, as someone who, he always seemed to give more penalties than any other referee. I at the time I didn't think it was because he loved the limelight, and maybe it is that, I don't know, but at the time it felt like he was the only referee who wouldn't change his thought process because a foul occurred in the penalty area.
Yeah.
And too many referees back then, I wonder if they still do, I'd have to have a think about it, but too many referees back then, it felt like they were making a different decision in the penalty area.
You wouldn't want to send someone off in the first 2 minutes.
Fine, that's exactly right, exactly that principle, where almost they apply their interpretation of the laws, which I know they have to do to a certain extent, in that way. Dean would always just say, it's a foul, so therefore it's a penalty. And that, I think that's, from my memory, that's really how his reputation kind of started, because he got a lot of attention for that, because people were going, another penalty in this game because it was Mike Dean kind of thing. And then it kind of all started from there.
Mm-hmm.
That's his origin story, for as far as
I
remember.
You then get clubs or fans of clubs convinced that he's got an agenda against them because he's just giving loads of penalties for everyone.
All good referees should have that. Howard Webb, Mark Clatton, I mean, people said that about all of them.
Can I push you for your favourite Mike Dean moment?
My favourite Mike Dean moment is probably going to be the celebration of a goal.
No, that's my one. Of course, that's my one. That's Tottenham, isn't it?
It won't be that one then.
That's what you're on about.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's against Villa. Which I think in retrospect, he was celebrating his own good refereeing, right? Because he played advantage and then Moussa Dembélé scored and he was like, I've done a good job.
And I mean,
which is quite, I mean, obviously I'm Tottenham, and I imagine if you're a Villa fan, you'd just be a bit like,
he should think about the public relations aspect of that. But I understand why he was pleased that he'd done a good job. That's fair enough. So my favourite moment, I'm going to start on a little bit of a tangent. Hopefully you'll indulge me. I went on holiday recently and I flew a very, very in a very small plane to get there, right? It was 8-seater. And I was sat right behind the pilot, and it was a very mechanical plane, an old-fashioned plane, not a jet engine or anything like that. And it was also very clear what he was doing, because I was sat literally closer to him than I am sat to you guys now. And he was doing it all very well. And what that meant was you could actually see him really doing the job. And it was quite insightful, but it also made you think, shit, I'm in some kind of tin can here.
Yes.
And if the guy piles in or has faints or something, we're basically dead, because there's no autopilot, there's no co-pilot. Anyway, the guy was great. Very, very relaxed, great personality. He was doing all the work himself. So he loaded the luggage onto the plane. He talked to you about the safety process, all the rest of it. And when we landed, he said, everybody, welcome to X. But the destination, he said, was a different destination on purpose, because he wanted to have a little joke at the end.
Oh,
right?
No.
Now, I admired it. I liked it, because I thought, you've done a good job there and you've treated yourself to a joke at the end, right? I've got no problem with that. I don't want a fucking clown before we get in the plane, but you've landed us. You've had a nice little joke to yourself. You probably say it to everyone. That's fine.
He's completed the journey.
Exactly.
Right? I thought he was doing it at the beginning. We're taking off and heading to wherever.
And that all leads us towards the moment that Mike Dean hid the hat-trick ball from Sergio Aguero in the Man City game. You've done a good job, Sergio. I've done a good job. Little that's joke at the end. Let's indulge ourselves.
Yeah.
And here's the ball. That's why that's my best moment.
So you wouldn't like the one where he sniffed the assistant referee, because I think that was pre-game.
Yeah. I don't want it pre-game.
Do you remember his utter disdain for the ball on a plinth?
Yeah.
That was good as well.
He just thought it was a load of old nonsense. Load of old,
just silly, innit?
Newfangled crap.
Yeah, exactly. Just get on with it.
The way he treated that plinth was like he was saying to himself, we used to be a country, a proper country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you all right with plinths? I imagine, Lee.
I like the plinth.
That might be one of your little big bugbears.
We were very taken by it at the start when it first started happening. We're like, okay, I like the way the referee... What it did is it gave respect to the referee. It was said, when the referee takes that ball off the plinth, he's decided that we're game on.
Yeah.
And it's down to him.
It's like when I push that button, isn't it?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah,
should be an airplane.
That's the respect you show.
That's the feature.
There's no reason it can't be an airplane.
Why isn't it just that car, though?
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be overdone by now, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
We'd be bored of the car by now. We'd be desensitised to it. And I never want to be desensitised to the little car. The little car was great.
I don't think you can legitimately ask a man of Mike Dean's profile and experience to referee a game that started by a remote control car.
There was, did you see the one fairly recently where a kid driving a little mini car? I think it was rugby. Yes.
More adorable. And less adorable that it's rugby, but more adorable.
I think it was rugby
kid.
And he drove part, I don't know, he lost control of the vehicle.
Really?
Yeah. That is a risk, isn't it?
Again, like you pressing the button.
Look, I just guide the vehicle. It's up to you if you want to crash it repeatedly into a bank.
I do.
Now, let's get to... Now, have we paid enough homage? We've paid full and complete homage to Mike Dean there.
We wish him all the best, don't we?
We wish him all the best, especially as we're going to... It's a shame not to get the flourish, I guess, if he's on VAR.
If he does a proper no-look yellow in his final game, we'll know he's self-aware. Mm-hmm. And I'll be looking out for that.
Clip this up, because I sincerely think he's going to send himself off. Now you've said that, Jim. I sincerely believe that. To give him his due, we should also probably say... that he has given a red in 20.6% of his games.
Yeah.
But the league average is 20.1%. So it is actually
on
pretty
on message.
On which is the button.
Mad, because it's 114 reds he's given, isn't it? So, and that's quite some way ahead of the next referee. But he's just been around so long that it kind of levels out.
It's incredible that he stayed at the top of the game for so long. When we wrote the Ramble book back in 2016, I did the referees chapter. And we did quite a lot of research into it. And Marcus and I did some fitness stuff around the refereeing.
Oh, no.
Right. And it's not terrible. A surprise that I couldn't do it. But Marcus couldn't really get that near it. And he was playing decent. He's a decent athlete, Marcus, really, especially then. And it showed you that some of the... And I'm not trying to set up Marcus as some kind of benchmark or whatever, but the point I am making is that some of these referees are pushing 50 years old.
They're all bloody 50. That's the thing at the moment. There's like four of them at 50.
So level of fitness alone is really, really tough.
Yeah.
And then you've got
Andre Mariner, Martin Atkinson, Kevin Friend, John Moss, and Graham Scott all over the age of 50.
And then you've got to factor in that when you're fatigued, it's far harder to make decisions and be calm and all the rest of it.
That might start adding fuel to the fire. We spent 10 minutes
completely taking the piss out of them. But is it okay to show a bit of balance and say that actually, when all said and done, it's a very impressive job?
Is it also okay to suggest little referee car?
Yeah, give him a hand.
Nice. Or one of those segues.
Yeah, that's really nice. That's a great visual image.
Excellent.
And we're just going to move on to Manchester United now.
Slick. So slick.
She's used a physical segue as a segue.
On to the managerial hunt of Manchester United. So look, since they've been knocked out of the Champions League, they've got 17 days because it's international break to really consider this issue. You'd have thought they might have committed a few days to it earlier than now, but it seems to be that their shortlist continues the same. Mauricio Pochettino still and Erik ten Hag also being linked, Luis Enrique and Julian Lopetegui. Mm. What do we think about this? Because I was thinking about, when City were deciding to... They had their plan to get in Pep Guardiola, a man who'd won a hell of a lot of titles, young Klopp at Liverpool when they were trying to, move them to the next level. Clearly, Poch holds a very special place in my heart. But you wouldn't say that they're the same, he and Ten Hag are the same level of like proven title winning managers, would you, Jim? I think it's fair to say.
No, but there's a lot of different factors that go into making a reputation, right? So I think, Pochettino has managed.
Overcoming Bayern Munich at the helm of Borussia Dortmund with far fewer resources. Yeah, that was...
Well, yeah, but I mean...
That's one way of doing it.
Yeah, but I think a reputation is a strange thing, isn't it? We're seeing it with Frank Lampard now. Like, his reputation seems like it could... He could just become part of like the modern merry-go-round of the kind of like, you know, you boilerplate British manager. Whereas, you know, Ten Hag managing at Ajax means perhaps... You know, he's won a lot more than Pochettino has, but Pochettino's managed in leagues with a lot more competition. And you know,
and he also does have the
France,
hardest,
obviously, but like,
he also has the hardest job in world football, basically.
In a weird way, yeah. I'm surprised that Man United don't have enough people working for them that they can do this not in an international break. Do you know what I mean? It seems like, seems like quite a big organisation. Yeah. Like, yeah. Are they so busy otherwise?
Well, I think obviously... Joking aside, you've hit on something there, Jim. I think we can look at this from a bottom-up way, as in, who's the manager, or we can look at it from a top-down way. I started thinking about this when I knew we were going to be talking about it, because the production guys wanted to talk about Pochettino and Ten Hag specifically. And I was thinking, okay, well, who's a better fit there? And just to be honest, I couldn't really convince myself that I can think of a manager who would be able to deliver any kind of sustained success at Manchester United, where they are at the moment. And that tells you a lot about Manchester United and not that much about the managers that are in the shortlist.
Agreed.
I do think there's some obvious points to make, which are that, you know, Pochettino would be going into a different version of almost exactly the same issue he's got at PSG at Manchester United. And he's not exactly showered himself in glory at PSG on a number of different levels. Now, there's a lot of mitigation there, a lot of reasons why you can only control what you can control.
Yeah.
And Erik ten Hag, I don't know as much about him. Andy said that, you know, he thinks that Ten Hag is a less good fit than Pochettino is. So I would defer to Andy on that knowledge. And the reason that Andy said that, I think from what I remember, is he said that Ten Hag is someone who needs a good football framework to be able to succeed. Now, at Ajax,
that's such a dig.
Ajax are kind of quite known for their framework and their philosophy and their kind of their situation and the way they bring for the old players and keep a philosophy going. Man United don't have that, and they're nowhere really close to having that. I know they've got a new guy in there to replace Woodward. I know that he's supposed to be a more collaborative figure than Woodward was, and perhaps they envisage him being a better fit than Woodward was on the football side and whoever else is in there. But also, you've got to figure out about Ralf Rangnick's role as well. I mean, what's he going to do? They don't know what he's going to do based on what they've been leaking out and what's been briefed to reporters. So it's all a bit of a mess. And very finally, just quickly, I would say that it's no coincidence that it's taken a long while to unpick what's happened at Man United, because it was so built around the cult of personality in Sir Alex Ferguson at a time when it was possible to do that. If they want to keep up with you know, clubs that are funded by essentially states and investment funds, something that we, you know, we all here don't think is a good idea, but it's happening. Mm. They aren't going to be able to do what they did with Ferguson. I don't think they should be looking just to one totemic figure, no matter how good a manager he is, to build their whole club around. Mm. And there are loads of other areas of Man United that need investment as well. Yeah. People who go to United all the time will tell you the stadium is not fit for purpose. Yeah. All the rest of it. So it's a big, big job. And I think actually if you only talk about the managerial position, you're talking about a very, very small part of it, and you're not going to solve the overarching problems that they've got at the club.
I think that's an interesting point, isn't it? Because clearly the problems go deeper than the manager, but they have made a change. As you say, Edward Wood's been replaced. Rangnick is going to go upstairs. So this is the beginning of the process of changing that, right? Rangnick has a really good reputation as a sort of sporting director. So, I mean... This could actually be the first steps in the right direction of them fixing this. So,
because that was the thing I was going to ask is like, does it seem to you guys? Because if you think about them generally, all the stuff about their like earnings calls. Look, I know that proper businesses have to do that, but it's the question about the footballing ambition. You know, the people, one of the other people that they've been linked with, of course, is Thomas Tuchel. Although that would seem to be like a very difficult and complicated thing to try and effect. But you know, the people around the club, I've read all sorts of things about people around the club say the atmosphere is a bit kind of cozy in terms of like it's not about the sporting edge really, and that could just be because people are extrapolating about the bloody pot noodle partners and all that sort of stuff. But there does seem to be something in that,
We see it happen at clubs, right? Players get comfortable because even if you're not winning things and the fans are on your back a bit, it's probably quite a nice life being a Man United player, isn't it?
Yeah.
If that just continues, it becomes the norm and the standards drop. We've seen it happen at my own club. We've seen it at loads of different clubs where players seem to get complacent. And also, this squad is a little bit of a strange concoction, isn't it? When you throw Ronaldo into the mix, which seemed kind of
that was just a branding exercise. We talked about it the whole time.
But that's not a good thing, is it?
No, it's not.
Terrible. And I think, that is more what I'm talking about rather than specifically the players, although I do think there's a lot of merit in that. You know, there's these things like Avram Glazer was in Dubai talking about the launching a cricket team. It's that sort of thing. It's the idea that, I don't know, maybe that would be good. I'm not sure, Luke, would you watch a Red Devils cricket team? I don't think you watch that much cricket, do you?
No, not much. I don't mind cricket. I sometimes text Vish really basic bone questions about cricket because I've been watching it for half an hour and he eviscerates me on WhatsApp.
I thought he would take you through it, like being your route in.
Why would he? I wouldn't do that for him. So why would he do that for me?
The point I'm making is it's everything around it. It's this common complaint about what's happened to Manchester United. It's just a brand, it's not a football club.
I think that's right. And I think everything you guys have said, I kind of broadly agree with. But if you're going to focus particularly on the playing staff, which I guess is probably what the listeners and the fans of the club want to hear about, if you look at the seasonal, according to Opta, the seasonal most picked team across this season, I think there's a pretty good argument that seven of them aren't good enough.
Right?
So is David De Gea good enough for the very level they need? Is he consistent enough? Aaron Wan-Bissaka's dropped off a cliff. Is Lindelof good enough? Is Harry Maguire good enough? Is Luke Shaw good enough? Is Scott McTominay good enough? Is Fred good enough? Is Mason Greenwood is a different kettle of fish. We can't really talk about him. The only ones you could really legitimately say are making a proper, consistent contribution at the level they need to be making a consistent contribution at are probably Bruno Fernandes, who's struggled badly since Ronaldo's come, or he's at least playing in a different way, which isn't as effective. Cristiano Ronaldo, you could say, look, when all's said and done, he's scoring a lot of goals.
Yeah.
So he's making a contribution in that way. But has he been great for the team? Probably not. And Jadon Sancho, who's really underperformed because he's going into an unhelpful environment, would be my
opinion. Until recently.
That's the whole fucking team. you've got to bear that in mind.
England's Harry Maguire and Luke Shaw.
Luke Shaw in particular, I think, is a good example as well, isn't he? Because he's had such a sort of up and down time at Man United. And he was absolutely fantastic for them last season. And going into the Euros, obviously, was such an asset. But again, his form has become a little bit more middling, and it's that unstable environment that you're talking about, isn't it?
I don't seem
to know what direction they're going in.
I think you're right about Luke Shaw last season, but I think of Luke Shaw now, and I remember the game they lost at home to Wolves in the turn of the year. He was awful, awful. Against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League last month, he got dragged off after an hour, awful. You know, these kind of things matter in these kind of games. They need to be getting results in. I'm not criticising them personally because they're human beings. They're doing their best, I'm sure. The environment's not great for them. But I've just given an example there that the whole team is potentially got problems. And we're not just talking about one or two players here. The whole team. So that's not going to help you when you're supposed to be judging yourself on the standards that you're Manchester United and you're supposed to be right at the very top table of European football all the time.
The thing is, though, guys, Gary Neville has actually solved the problem here, because the issue that they have, he's tweeted yesterday, I remember a time when United players, executives, managers wouldn't be seen in their local Italian after a draw at home, let alone getting knocked out of Europe. This last week, we've seen a global tour of F1, concerts, cricket and UFC events. This lot are capitalised, just the first letters of each. Tone deaf.
Interesting choice, that.
So basically, if they didn't go out so much, well, I mean, there's an argument to be made that if you don't go out so much, you play better football. I certainly find that.
It's a generational thing, though, isn't it? I'm sure those players went out when they were younger. It's just there wasn't social media, as Gary Lineker pointed out.
Yeah, and Roy Keane said a similar thing.
Carragher said you should be crying. Basically, worst of the fact, you should be crying in your fucking bedroom if you've lost a game of football. So I don't know what they're doing.
But I do think there's an argument. There's definitely a conversation to be had here around the idea that should players be. Of course they should have other interests. Of course they should have a bit of light and shade and have time to
decompress.
But on the other hand, that F1 race has been Bahrain.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We're not talking about popping to the end of the road for a bite to eat. I don't think anyone else would begrudge him having interest outside of football, having social media accounts, going out for dinner with their whatever. I don't care about that. But there's a conversation to be had there.
Do you think so? Because is it not just the equivalent of us going to the pub? Like, you know, when you've got that much money, you're just like, oh, I fancy a weekend away. All right, let's pop to Bahrain.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a long old journey, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not saying that I fully agree with Gary Neville, because I don't, but I'm also not saying that his comments aren't without merit in principle.
Jesus, that's not the route I thought we'd be going.
You asked for a quick take. There's a quick take.
All right.
Can't win, can I, Jim?
No. Right. Thanks, Luke.
You're welcome.
You always win with me. All right. Let's get to a break, everybody. Plenty more to come.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Welcome to Eureka, the show that gets under the skin of science, in a good way. I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks.
Not the kind of doctor who'd be able to help much if you were having like a heart attack. But if you're wondering about quantum physics or the theory of matter, he's your man.
Well, probably.
Every week we're asking a new, puzzling question from the world of science and discovering the answer with the help of a world-leading expert.
Like, will we ever talk to animals?
They are definitely talking. You know, that's, again, a word that I would qualify, because we usually mean that vocally. But in their own ways, they're talking to us every single day.
Are face transplants the future of cosmetic surgery?
Given that range of what's considered attractive, there's probably no point wanting to change your face to be more attractive if you follow science. And should we fear an alien invasion?
If an imperialistic drive brings other civilizations to us, then obviously it's not good news. But if it's scientific exploration, it may be good news.
If you're interested in learning a little bit more about the weird, magnificent world around us, then this is the show for you. Eureka. Subscribe now and find us on Twitter at EurekaPod. New episodes every Wednesday.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
This is stayed down.
You would too, Chris.
Yeah. You hit him in the penis.
Love it.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble. Me, Jim and Luke with you today. And now we've got time for some emails.
If you've got something for us, show at footballramble.com.
Ooh.
Rebecca's been in touch. She says, as a Chelsea fan, I have been closely following the constant stream of news surrounding the club's potential new owners, for which the candidates appear to range from shady billionaires to murderous despots, a shortlist which says a lot about the state of modern football. I've also been wondering how the new owners will be chosen. In lieu of any transparency about this process, I would like to suggest an apprentice-style competition in which the various consortiums compete in a series of tasks to win the right to use our beautiful game their no doubt nefarious means. Suggested challenges could be arranging transport and accommodation for the team and support staff to Madrid for the Champions League quarterfinal tie within whatever arbitrary budget the government decide.
Nice.
Writing a PR statement on the latest twist in the crisis without embarrassing the entire club. Acquiring a new shirt sponsor to replace three, preferably with a self-produced accompanying cringe-inducing promotional video. We would also need to select a panel to decide who will be hired. Alan Sugar is out as the main man, being a Spurs fan. Yeah. Karen Brady's role with West Ham would also be a conflict of interest. I was thinking the mysterious dubious goals committee might be interested in extending their reach into other murky means, or maybe a selection of our finest VAR officials, as we all know how consistently sensible their decision making has been shown to be. Please let me know your thoughts on my idea and any suggestions for challenges. It would be fun to watch the Saudi princes, US property tycoons and Sebco take on.
Yeah, I completely agree. The Apprentice is always a marvel every week. I enjoy watching it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the only thing I would disagree with Rebecca on is the idea of who the panel's going to be.
Yeah.
Because I immediately thought Jeremy Clarkson, Suggs and Phil Daniels. Who are the
Tim
three
Lovejoy,
most famous?
Maybe.
Oh, Lovejoy. But does he still support them? Because he's flipped around
point.
A bit,
he might be a City fan now. Who knows?
It would be funny to have Suggs doing it.
It would be. Yeah. It would. Yeah.
I wish we had more influence. How can we make this happen?
I love watching The Apprentice because it is like so...
So cringe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is...
We were saying about Ronaldo the other day. They don't know that they're prats, these people.
I think they do.
You were saying about Ronaldo. I was saying about Paul McCartney.
True.
I like the idea that
he's got a cool daughter there, hasn't he? As we were discussing.
I don't really know much about her.
Well, only because she's designing the kit.
Arsenal women's
kits, yeah.
But I was going to say on The Apprentice, it's a post reality show era reality show, because essentially they're not even trying to give them an environment where they can succeed. No. In fact, they're going out of their way to make them look stupid, and people are still doing it.
Yeah. Is that not a lot of the editing? Maybe they're just perfectly normal, lovely, thoughtful.
Okay, well, let me rephrase it then.
People without any hubris or arrogance.
We're going to go halfway towards making you look stupid by the way we structure the show, and then we're going to properly see you off in the edit. Mm. People know that's happening, they still go on it.
Welcome to the Football Ramble. Get your dilemmas in for Pep Talks tomorrow on the show. It's show at footballramble.com, or you can tweet us at Football Ramble. Send us all your biggest dilemmas. I don't think we can help with this top dilemma here, which is how the fuck is anyone who supports Manchester City or Liverpool going to get to the FA Cup semi-final next month? Well, I'll tell you, they're not going to be using the train, because there are not going to be any direct trains at all from either Manchester or Liverpool to London.
Traffic update. That's nice.
Yeah.
That is an issue, isn't it? Could they perhaps do some sponsored walks, raise money for Chelsea? Show some solidarity?
How long do you reckon that would take?
Borrow Chelsea's minibus. No, it's terrible, because we
it's ridiculous.
The people
utterly ridiculous.
Totally ludicrous.
I agree. The people at the top of football in this country and the people at the top of the train networks have somehow conspired to fuck it up. Well, I'm not surprised by it. I don't want you to think that I'm not saying it's ridiculous, because obviously I know it is, but I'm not surprised by it, because what do you expect from average people running average organisations that just happen to have a huge amount of interest from the public, and therefore, everything goes wrong all the time.
It takes, I just looked it up, if you were to walk from Anfield to Wembley, it would take 63 hours.
Yeah.
So it's actually, what, 3 days?
It's a long walk. Just under.
Assuming you don't sleep.
But when you bear in mind the idea that the only reason that the FA Cup semi-finals are happening at Wembley in the first place is because the FA mismanaged their own finances so badly they had to have more games at Wembley, just as many as possible to pay for it. And we still have a situation where we're expecting Man City fans and Liverpool fans to travel all the way down to London, even though the distance between their two cities is really marginal by comparison. And then we're not going to give them any way to travel. And by the way, even if they did have a way to travel on the trains, it would be so extortionately expensive that people would have to take out a fucking mortgage to do it. So, and that's all bound up in the idea that apparently the government wants us to be more environmentally friendly. Yeah. So it is an absolute shambles. but it's not surprising.
Will there be rail replacement buses, perhaps? Like an absolute fleet of rail replacement buses.
I don't think they do them for journeys that long.
Yeah, no, it'd be too far, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So it's mad. What it might make for is the angriest atmosphere we have ever seen at Wembley since the Euros final.
Yes, it's the last big game of Wembley. I suppose we had the League Cup final. What I would advise is, you know, given that in this climate of people's cost of living being squeezed and it's being really difficult, and, you know, people like Martin Lewis on Money Saving Experts saying, yeah, you know,
I'm running out of tips.
He said, I can't help you with this.
Ridiculous.
The only thing I can advise now is government intervention, is what he said. So it's very difficult for people generally. We all know that. It would be a really nice gesture, and also a good PR win as well for the clubs, know, both of whom are wealthy, to say, you know what, we'll take care of it. So I know it shouldn't fall to the players. It shouldn't fall to even the clubs in this situation, I don't think, personally. But maybe it's a nice PR win for them to do that, because basically all they're saying is, you've all been let down. We know that. Here, we'll help you out, kind of thing. It feels to me like the kind of thing that would have happened in the past. You hear players doing that quite a lot, didn't you?
Well, do a few planes.
I don't know how they would go about doing it.
It's just a major hassle getting trying really, to drive really all that away,
really
especially
tough.
That many people.
Yeah, it's really tough.
So the supporters groups at the moment have combined and have said, can we just have it like somewhere in the north?
Well, they
please?
Should be doing that. They should, yeah. Be. They should be doing that.
Can you move it out of 100%. Wembley?
In perspective, for those of us
fucking
who,
ludicrous.
In perspective, for those listening who live, who aren't listening in the UK.
In the UK, yeah.
I live in West Norwood in South London, and I find it impossible to travel to and from Wembley in northwest London, because just the transport network's just not up to it.
Yeah.
So the decisions you have to make based around visiting Wembley are very, very annoying because it's not been done properly. There was no justification for building it there when they had a chance to rebuild it. So look, it's as ever on this show, we're just talking about a lot of things that are just a complete shit show.
Yeah, it's true. Sorry, I guess sticking with the FA a little bit, talking about England's squad replacement. So we, a few injuries, of course, but it means that for the England team, Tyrique Mitchell and Kyle Walker-Peters have received their first England senior call-ups. Aaron Ramsdale, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Reece James and Tammy Abraham have withdrawn through injury, which means that Sam Johnstone and Ollie Watkins are back in as well. No Cameron Phillips in this England squad. Of course, he is being linked with Aston Villa and also West Ham, you guys.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So on the England squad thing, it's great to see that players are being rewarded. I mean, Tyrique Mitchell particularly has been very good. Still very young in his career, of course. His teammate has also been called up. And then Kyle Walker-Peters is someone who's played a lot through the youth ranks, and we've seen Gareth Southgate kind of show not preferential treatment, but he shows that he does prefer that to have people around.
Like a pathway, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So it's great for them. I remember a time when players would be brilliant and they would never get picked because they didn't play for a big team, and that was a real bugbear for a lot of England fans. It feels like we're truly past that now because, you know, Ward-Prowse is also playing, you know, fairly.
Although I thought Ivan Toney deserved a little nudge.
Mm. You said that you thought Tyrique Mitchell was being called up early because he's potentially could declare for someone else.
Yeah, correct. So he, in contrast to Kyle Walker-Peters, he hasn't played in any of the England junior setup, and he could declare for Jamaica. And Jamaica have been doing a really like impressive job of getting lots of particularly England-based players to declare for them, and Mikel Antonio as well, of course, joined their squad. So this is not based on any kind of wicked whispers from Gareth, but I wondered if that was part of the reason. You know, he played so well very recently. I enjoyed watching him in the City game, for example. But it seems like kind of a canny move to get him to play for England at this point.
Absolutely. And then on the Calvin Phillips thing, I find it quite interesting because a big part of why Leeds have struggled in the way they have has been because Calvin Phillips and Patrick Bamford haven't been consistently available.
Yeah,
right?
Liam Cooper as well.
They almost, it's like in midfield, they don't really know what to do without Calvin Phillips. And up front, they without the focal point of Bamford, who brings everyone else in, they kind of really struggle.
Mm.
Now, Phillips has also been an important player for England, as we all know, and it's obviously too early for him to come back into the squad for now. But this is the second time, and if you factor in that there's two clubs this time, with Villa and West Ham, the third time, that Phillips has somehow been linked, right, with another move, with a move to a club that are roughly a kind of similar level. I don't be disrespectful to West Ham Villa, but they're in that kind of bracket. Leeds are underperformed this season, but I don't think anyone could argue about the size of club at Leeds.
Okay, I would separate those two guys out, wouldn't you?
Not in terms of size of club, I wouldn't.
In terms of obviously West Ham's achievement, this last yesterday, trying not to patronise them, so I'm just...
They've done incredibly
in Europe this season, yeah.
They have, but I think it's fair to say that Leeds and West Ham are roughly similar size of club, right? So it's not necessarily a mad stepping stone to a big club move, because that's really disrespectful to Leeds, I think. But the fact that he keeps being linked makes me think that there's something going on there. Like maybe there is an opportunity to get him, and maybe he is looking, because he's 26 now, maybe he is looking and going, I want a much bigger contract, and he'll get a much bigger contract if he moves. There's no way Leeds are going to give him the same money to stay. I suppose they might do, but it's just interesting to me, because normally if players don't want to be open to a move, it doesn't really come up.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, as you say. I feel like he could, with respect to Villa and West Ham, probably could play for a club of a higher profile. The club that need him most, you would argue, is Man United.
He won't never go there.
Exactly. Yeah, that's going to be really, really difficult. So, yeah, it'd be really interesting to see where he lands. If Villa can get him, that is huge.
It's a big statement from them.
Absolutely massive statement. If they can get him and they can keep Coutinho as well, and that will obviously, one helps the other. They could really. They're building a really good platform there,
and I think the link there is the Steven Gerrard thing.
Yeah.
I think we've seen how much players of that generation just love Steven Gerrard. Like the opportunity, particularly the position that Calvin Phillips plays, you can see why he'd want to play under Gerrard.
But does he mind being kicked?
Well, yeah, Gerrard's got a big thing about that, hasn't he?
Yeah,
I like. So you talk about Gerrard talking about
Saka,
Bukayo Saka. One thing that was funny about that. So what is it about people of a certain generation? And Gerrard is of our generation, really. Yeah. Well, mine and Jim's, at least. Anyway, yeah. A bit kinder to you, Kate.
Thanks.
But why? I don't think to myself, I had it really hard, so I want other people to have it harder.
I know, right?
It's like,
yeah.
I'd quite like the younger people to have a better life than I had. Not that I had a terrible life, but do you know what I mean? It happens quite a lot in political stuff, you know? Like, we can't forgive student debt because we had to pay our debt, so why the fuck shouldn't
exactly,
they pay
yeah.
it? Why not just make the world a better place?
I remember reading in my once. Day. Why shouldn't you get beaten up by sixth formers?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, very relatable. I did read once that apparently the empathy centre in your brain shrinks as you get older, which apparently why people are generally seen to become more right-wing as they get
good
older.
Insight,
because
mate.
Your brain is just different.
Are you saying
maybe
people who are right-wing
a switch
don't have
is flipped.
Are you saying people who are right-wing don't have any empathy?
I'm saying that some right-wing people have less empathy than more liberal people, yes. I don't think that's controversial.
Fair. I just want clarification of your statement, that's all.
Yeah.
Philip Brown is back in management.
Yeah.
That wasn't a segue. That's just
change
a fact. League Two Barrow have appointed him as manager until the end of the season, you guys. Do we think that's a good call? He got obviously relegated with Southend.
Jim will have his own opinion. He's crap. So, I mean, it just depends how much Barrow need him.
Yeah.
Why do people need someone who's crap, especially if they're in potential relegation out of the Football League situation?
It's probably the only category that's available, isn't it, if you're in that situation?
But all they know about him recently, in particular, is that he can get people relegated. I don't know if that's useful here.
No, it's not. It's definitely a
punt, isn't
it?
At least he's been there and done it, I guess.
Yeah. Although, I mean, at the same time, he has managed in the Premier League. So you would probably take a punt on him, despite recent history. We've not seen him in a while, and he's sort of evolving, isn't he? He's like a Pokemon. Like he was the last time we saw him, he had that sort of kind of David Dickinson look.
Like he'd be hosting
Bargain Hunt. For me, it's Tregar from Nightmare again.
Oh yeah, okay.
Very very 80s and 90s TV show where lead children around an imaginary dungeon. And he's just got a really similar
things
look.
Things were different then, weren't they?
They were.
Can't make any TV shows these days, can you, compared to that?
No.
I like, from his point of view, I see why. It's a beautiful part of the world, the Lake District. I wouldn't say Barrow is the nicest part of the Lake District, but it's at least on the border of it, or maybe even part of it, down up in the northwest. And he's just come back from a little stint in India, hasn't he? So,
yeah.
I mean, he's not doing any work out there, is he? He's not going to be out there going, right, fucking 8 o'clock training, get the cones out. He's not going to be doing that. And there's nothing that suggests... Like, Phil Brown, look, hear it from me now. Phil Brown's a crap manager, right? So it's sad that clubs down the bottom of League Two, I think there's a stat that people were talking about saying that six of the bottom eight clubs have changed their manager recently in League Two because it's such a disaster to drop out the Football League. So I'm not trying to make light of the fact that Barrow...
are in a bad position.
Because that's obviously terrible. They obviously picked the manager they think can get them out of trouble. At least he's a name, I suppose. He's got experience working with big players.
Christ, you'd be better off having the reverse of that, wouldn't you? Just get someone who's an actually good coach.
I would say that.
Who's no one's heard of. Perfect. Yeah. Get some women. You could probably get a fucking, like, you know, a top quality female manager to go and manage Barrow.
Mm.
There's my tuppence for you.
They've done it now. They can't go back on it. It's been announced.
Luke, come on, they will be going back on it.
The fans.
At some point, probably in the not too distant future, they will be going back on that appointment.
Yeah. Possibly by the time the show comes out.
Just a quick reminder, there's a brand new Up Front out today on Football Ramble Presents. The team are previewing the return of Women's Champions League action with some huge games coming up this week, including El Clasico tonight, Arsenal versus Wolfsburg tomorrow. Get involved. That's on Football Ramble Presents and it's out later today. All right, gang, that was fun.
Yeah, I'm jealous of Upfront because I haven't got to talk about Phil fucking Brown.
Oh, man, Luke was totally inserting that into the running order.
They're doing big Champions League stuff. Talking about El Clasico, we have to do Phil Brown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess if they've got to the end of this.
Phil Brown and the Apprentice we've done.
It wasn't like this in our day, was it, Luke?
Exactly.
On tomorrow's show, it is Marcus, Andy and Vish taking the heat.
I'm going to turn all their mics the wrong way around so they have to as hard as we did back in the day. They're going to break Vish's leg.
Yeah.
But that's it
turn
from us.
Toughen up.
That's it from us today.
Yeah.
Jim, Luke, off you pop. Thanks for listening to today's Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.